All right, so when I prepared the talk, I had the feeling it's actually, the story might already be over, but now after listening to your talks, I think it might come just right in time. And as the chairman already said, it's about which model to pick for intraspecific competition. And the motivation is sympatric speciation. So Ulf started over 10 years ago with this influential paper where the claim was sympatric speciation might be driven as a mechanism removing unfit heterozygotes. So you have something like disruptive selection on a quantitative trait where heterozygotes or intermediate types sit on a fitness minimum, and so some mechanism should evolve that should successively reduce the number of heterozygotes or intermediate types, and the mean fitness should successively increase, and assortative mating was supposed to be one mechanism that could do that until you are successfully removed all heterozygotes. So, but I don't want to focus on assortative mating, but on competition. And so this disruptive selection always came in these many models on speciation from a negative frequency-dependent selection, which was motivated typically by intraspecific competition. Now, in the literature, if you browse it through carefully, there's a lot of debate about the model of assortative mating, but much less attention was brought to the underlying intraspecific competition model. And so the story is all of these models that flow around in the literature are kind of equivalent in a certain way. And you can read it in Reinhardt's GMB paper. Actually, they deserve a closer look. And anyhow, all models have kind of the same interpretation, which is you have some resource distribution depicted by this Gaussian function, and you have some population with some trait that is correlated to resource utilization. So in this example, the charm morphology of this different fish. And so depending on the charm morphology, they can use these resources according to their preference functions, and that induces two ingredients to selection. First, the resource spectrum induces some kind of stabilizing selection. If it's Gaussian, if you put some other function, it is some other kind of a frequency-independent effect. And then you get a frequency-dependent effect that comes from competition for resources, which is typically also modeled by a Gaussian or a quadratic function. And that depends on this overlap of these functions. And you have the mean competition is then the amount of competition each genotype experience from competing with all other genotypes or individuals in the population. So now we heard a lot about the rough garden model already in this workshop, which dates back to rough garden or Slatkin, which has roughly this fitness function. So the fitness of a genotype is something like 1 plus growth rate minus population size over frequency-independent component times frequency-dependent component. So this model was heavily used, like Ulf used it in his sympatric speciation paper with Michael, and after that it was heavily used in the literature. But it was it has this non-generic behavior of this continuous coexistence in the asexual case, which is kind of structurally unstable, as Geyser proved in one of his papers. And this model earned some more criticism from Nick and Yitka. And especially one point of criticism is that if you have a resident population at the optimum, then extreme types have extremely high invasion fitness, but once they are established to a certain frequency, they experience extremely strong density-dependent selection. And so that are all features that are kind of unnatural. So anyhow, there are alternatives. And one of these alternatives is the Bulmer model. It looks roughly like that. And that is stabilizing selection multiplied by growth rate minus population size times frequency-dependent effect. Okay? That was introduced by Bulmer, and Reinhardt used it, and me and Reinhardt used it, and that also got some attention in the literature. The advantage of that model is that it avoids this non-generic behavior, and you kind of get rid of the problem that extreme types have high invasion fitness. Okay, so extreme types will have low invasion fitness because stabilizing selection is multiplied in the fitness. So kind of the disappointing thing is that we always have this picture that I showed, this motivation picture of resource competition in mind. But this fitness function actually implies that frequency-independent selection and frequency-dependent selection act at different stages of the selective cycle. And that's also not a feature that is very intuitive. So there are other models, like that of Matesi, that came up with a kind of abstract formulation. So fitness is just given by a quadratic function of the genotypes, the mean genotypic value, and genetic variance. And the nice thing of the feature of this model is it approximates this Roughgarden model and the Bulmer model. It has good analytical properties, but on the other hand, you can't model density dependence in that formulation, and you cannot model strong selection because it's, after all, it's a quadratic model. But there's some model that I found quite neglected in the literature, and that was the version from Christiansen and Leschke, which uses it looks roughly like that. So fitness of a given genotype is 1 plus some growth rate and out times frequency-independent component minus population size times frequency-dependent component. So problem, it was not so frequently used, but it has all the nice properties of the Roughgarden model, namely it is derived from explicit Lotka-Volterra competition equations. And it overcomes all the weak points kind of the other model. So we can model density dependent. We don't have the non-generic behavior. We don't have high invasion fitness of extreme types. And the nice analytical property is this thing is a gradient system in continuous time. Okay? That was kind of a feature that was never recognized. So I mentioned that with Carlo in one of our papers, so that it actually has this analytic property. And I believe if they actually would have discovered it earlier, then the model would have gotten much more attention. But even better is what Carlo and me call the wildcard model. That's just an abstract formulation of the Christiansen-Leschke model, which means fitness is just some frequency-independent component of the genotype plus a population growth function that has to satisfy this condition, times frequency-dependent effect, plus some function of the population distribution and the population size, which is the same for all genotypes. Okay, and of course, the competition, the interaction coefficients should be symmetric, as they arise naturally symmetric from the Roughgarden model or the Bulmer model, from how they are derived just as the Gaussian function of their difference. So, nice property here is this model is a gradient system if you formulate it in continuous time, with diploid genetics. If you assume the trait is determined by a single locus that can express dominance, It also works to a certain extent with multi-locus genetics, so that the genotype is now determined by several loci, as long as you can assume quasi-linkage equilibrium. So you have to prove that, which typically holds if you assume no epistasis but dominance within each locus. And it works with and without density dependence. In discrete time, some people like me prefer discrete time models. The results are kind of a bit weaker. Namely, we have to get rid of this function and the population size needs to be constant. And then it turns out that it is a discrete time gradient system. And so the nice thing of this model is, so it is a gradient system, so we have an inherent maximization principle. So meaning all trajectories always converge to the set of equilibria. The model accommodates a lot of other models, including the Bulmer and the Rough Garden model, and that's why we named it the Wild Card model, because it's kind of a joker card for all these models with different interpretation. And the nice thing is now we hold the key to study long-term evolution and make the transition to adaptive dynamics. So far, I just talked about something like this. So we have a population that is mixed between yellowfish and redfish, and then we have some intermediates, these heterozygotes, the orange fish, and so they change the distribution over time. So that is all short-term dynamics. But adaptive dynamics is more concerned with long-term dynamics. So you have a population in equilibrium. Now an invader comes, so a mutation occurs, depicted by this orange fish, and then we jump immediately to the next equilibrium. Okay, now this mutant invaded, and we end up with a population, a homozygote for this red fish, and so forth and so on. And with these models, you can actually study long-term equilibrium, long-term evolution. And this is an example for long-term evolution in this model with multi-locus genetics, where you have three loci determining the trait. And you see how these effects on each locus evolve. And here's the evolution of the genotypic values. So you see the population starts, converges to a branching point, and then you get several branches, and so on. And that can be all done analytically. So there are some more pictures. And so nice thing is, we have a method now to, because of this underlying maximization principle, to synthesize classical population genetic modeling with adaptive dynamics. So we don't need to explicitly consider short-term dynamics. That's all because they are already taken into account by the properties of the model. So it works for diploid sexual populations, partly for multi-locus genetics. We can model strong selections. So you can put anything in there in the model. You can, if you go back to this illustration, you don't need to put a Gaussian resource competition function. You can put any function you want, bimodal, trimodal, whatever. You can also model mutants with large effects, which is a kind of an extension to the classical adaptive dynamics assumption that mutations have small effects. And so I think it's the end of the talk, but definitely there is a lot of work that can be done using these methods.